to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 470, to be broadcast on Wednesday, January 28th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below. I may or may not be able to get back to you because I'm here all by myself. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can just make a comment down right down here below, or you can send me an email if you're listening to an audio file at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week, the talk of D.C. Yes, that's the District of Columbia, otherwise known as our illustrious capital. Rumors are flying that the Trump administration wants to undo bike lanes at the Capitol. Boy, you want to pick a fight with me? There you go. Removing bike lanes? Come on, we're just starting to go forward here. The feds appear to be mounting an argument that bike lanes cause congestion in the nation's capital, and advocates are bracing for a fight. I'll have a little bit more of that later on in the show. To add to that, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy believes, as he stated back in April, that you see more congestion when you add bike lanes and take away vehicle lanes, though he cited no evidence. Obviously, he's never ridden a bike or understand anything about transportation. But that's all right. He's a transportation secretary. Go for it. And on another rant, New Jersey. Yeah, I'm going to yell out at New Jersey, where I am headed to this weekend, by the way. We're going down for a bar mitzvah for Fran's nephew. And so we will be in the illustrious state of New Jersey. I am not bringing my e-bike, though. Now, I don't really have an e-bike, but I'm not going to bring my e-bike because there's something going on in New Jersey, and it completely floors me when I hear about their new, most restrictive e-bike law. We'll get more about that into the show. On a positive side, there's a Minneapolis retailer that is helping plan Preti Memorial Rides nationwide. Yeah, we got a lot of things going on in Minneapolis right now, but one of the latest person who was murdered in Minneapolis was a nurse. He is also known in the community as an avid cyclist. So there's going to be a memorial ride that is being planned. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. Along with that, there is a component manufacturer. Actually, there's a whole bunch of things in Minneapolis. That's where Quality Bicycle Products is from. Probably one of the largest suppliers of bike products in the United States to retailers. That's Minneapolis. Wolf Tooth Components is another one of those bicycle-oriented businesses that's there. If you are an e-bike rider or a mountain bike rider, you would know what Wolf Tooth is because they tend to cater to that market right there, making really high-quality chain rings, etc. So anyway, their employees are standing in solidarity with Minneapolis. Lots of things going on out there. I think we've probably heard enough of that, but we are going to hear a little bit more. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. Meanwhile, let's move on to the Mechanical Minute and bike tips. And also my comment on the cervical fusion blues. Yeah. Well, I did a lot of shoveling this last weekend because we got dumped on by, I don't know, about 18 inches of snow or so, which is not conducive to good cycling, but it's really good for getting a great workout shoveling snow. And when you've got a bridge in the back of your neck, it's, uncomfortable, but not that it wasn't possible. So anyway, we'll move on. We'll get closer. Once the weather gets nicer, I'll be able to give you many more reports about the cervical fusion blues. But in the meantime, it's winter cycling, and winter cycling training guide I have here is 11 ways to become a faster cyclist. And yeah, it's winter. Yeah. So what do? You ride inside. A lot of us ride inside. There are those that ride outside, but there are a number of us who just ride inside, and that's the way we deal with it. So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit more about that today as soon as I figure out where I put my, I have so many things here that I wanted to talk about, and they're all popping up at the same time. All right, so this comes from our friends at Trainer Road. And they cater to cyclists that are either, you know, serious or just want to improve in any way they can. Could be a bicycle racer, could be a century rider, it could be someone who's just new in cycling and wants to learn all they can learn. So it's a nice little organization, and they have a great little website, and they help people with training and nutrition and bike setup and just basic news and racing and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, a successful spring and summer riding season hinges mainly on one thing, your winter cycling training plan. The type of work you put in now will pay massive dividends in the future. Remember last week, on last week's show, if those of you who watched it could hear it, and the audio file is available, by the way. Unfortunately, I had a little trouble with the video last week. Apparently, Facebook and iOS had some sort of a communication issue, and so I did double check today to make sure that I really had volume here today, so that's good. Rick, if you could give me a thumbs up just to let me know that you can hear me, that would be super helpful, because I'm assuming that I'm heard, because I did do a test video, and then I trashed it just to make sure it was really working. Anyway, last week I talked about wall sits and about, you know, doing those horrendously difficult wall sits. It seems like such a simple thing to do, just sitting in a chair against a wall, except you're not in a chair, you're just you against the wall, looking like you're sitting in a chair. Yeah, they're tough. And my legs are screaming at me because I've been playing with those all last week, and they're very interesting. It's a very interesting. But anyway, we're gonna move on from that, because there are other things here that we need to talk about, like how do I set a smart winter cycling training goal? Well, you know, if you are looking for a goal, you kind of have to look at what you want out of your year versus what you had last year. So if last year you were doing the proverbial, oh, please don't get me started on this, chasing of the miles, you know, how many miles can I ride this year? I hate riding the miles. I like the hours better than the miles. Back when I was young and foolish, I was chasing miles all the time, but... And, of course, I have some numbers that I can reflect upon that, and I can tell you how many miles is my best year ever and all that, but I don't do that anymore. I go by hours spent, because I can spend really, really good quality hours sitting on an indoor bicycle, and I know it's not the same as riding outdoors. I will be the first, absolute first, to admit it. I tell you, the difference when you get outside is night and day compared to being indoors, but you can build some really good base training indoors. So this is a study done by the Dominican University on Goals Research. They found that people are a whopping 33% more likely to complete their goals if they write them down, create an action plan, and share them with a friend. So there's where you begin, okay? You want to start by consulting let's call it a training log, okay? Set measurable goals. Do not set something that's completely unrealistic. I mean, you know, you could have set a goal in January that you were going to do X number of hours, and, you know, X number of those were going to be outdoors. And then it did what it's been doing up here in the Northeast. Bitterly cold and lots of snow. Obviously, you're not going to be able to do that. It's not realistic. But hours are always realistic. So I am big on hours. And if you don't train with power, how do you analyze your past performance? Well, you know, you can do it by taking a look at the time you spent on the bike. Once again, the time is a key component here. I have a general rule of, because I teach so much, I have a lot of hours that I have on my legs before I even hit the road. Generally speaking, it runs somewhere between 70 and 90 hours before the rubber hits the road. Now, there may be that occasional bike ride that I get out on that because for some reason, all of a sudden it went up to 60 degrees in January or February. That hasn't happened yet. Anyway, but it could happen in February. It could happen in March. And then you go, well, I'm just going to go ride my bike today because it's just too nice out. I can't not ride my bike. And so, you know, that can happen. But in general, I put on a lot of hours that are really focused with performance-oriented cycling and or, get this, believe it or not, 70 to 80% of my training is not performance-oriented. Why is that? Because it's smart. And that's what people don't seem to realize. They think they get on the trainer, and because they're on the trainer or they're on a spin bike or they're in a competitive class, that they have to just kick their butts hard. You can do that. It's not necessarily the smartest thing to do, but you can do that if you want. You really need to take a look at your numbers, and you need to take a look at your goals. And if there is a particular, kind of like the outdoor ride, you know, that weekly ride that everybody shows up and it's like everyone's looking at each other like you're in a big bike race and you're going for this weekly ride. Let's hope that you didn't ride really hard the day before that ride. Got to think smart here. Think smart. Rest your body. Your body needs rest. Your body can't compete. Your body can't perform high levels without proper rest. So always take a look at that. If you have not been looking at that, this is a great year to set a goal, a first goal, on discovering what your functional threshold power levels are. And that can be done very, very easily, again, on an indoor bicycle. And you can figure out where you're at as far as when your heart gets up to 80% or above. And you can figure it out from that point. You do a 10-minute time trial and off you go. If you don't know how to do that, just Google it. I hate to say that. You know, it's like kind of become the big verb, huh? So you just Google it. And you will find that there are a number of ways to discover what your functional threshold power levels are. From there, you can set up a whole program. Once again, helps if you have a coach. That's a super, super helpful thing. If you don't have a coach, again, you can figure it out by looking online. There's lots and lots and lots of things that you can find to help you with your training. And I would say that one of the majors on this is that it's probably going to slow you down a little bit. It's probably going to make you train a little bit easier on more days than you used to in the past. Just saying. You tell me. You can write back to me. You can let me know. See what you discovered when you went out to do this. You'd be surprised. I was always surprised. The first day I went out and I bought myself a heart rate monitor back when I owned my bike store, because I could get them, you know, wholesale through one of my distributors. And I figured, you know what? I'm going to try this out. See what it's like. I was doing a mix of running and cycling back then. And I thought it would be an interesting tool to figure out where I was at. I was currently at that time, I think I was training for a marathon when I got that. And so I was reading a book by Jeff Galloway. Does that sound right? I think that's right. Anyway, guy who was just writing books and running marathons and, you know, just pretty smart about training and ideas. I went out for my first training run with that heart rate monitor on, and I had to walk a lot. Yeah, I know. Seems crazy, doesn't it? But you know what? I was training too fast, and that's where I ran into the problem. Now, I also ran into the solution. Within 30 days, I was racing at about 30 seconds faster for a 5K than I had originally done in the past. So does it work? Yes. Is it the right thing to do? I think so. You know, you got to really pay attention. Pay attention to your body. Pay attention to what your body can handle. And make sure you set up your training schedule in a realistic fashion. Step number two, pick a goal event. Right, you got a goal event. So you know what they are. That's that thing you like to do every year. You know, I've got a gravel ride coming up in the end of March that I like to do every year. And I would like to be fit enough to be able to do fairly well, like, you know, complete it without tremendous amounts of pain and torture. And that's my goal. That's it. Because I've been off my bike for a while here with all the stuff that's been going on with my neck and the big operation that I had done, the cervical fusion and all that. My fitness is predictably awful and it needs improvement, and I'm working on that this winter. And so I have a whole bunch of goals that I'm working on this winter. And again, if you write them down, you can stay in line with them. The other beauty of this, big beauty of this, is that you can go back next year and look at it and see where you were then and where you are now. So that's all good too. So number three, so pick a goal event, okay? Step number three, create a realistic winter cycle training plan. Yeah, I talked about that a little bit earlier about, you know, not getting yourself diving into, I'm going to ride outside 3 days a week every single week throughout the month of January type stuff. Don't do that. It never works out that way. Maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you live in Florida and you can ride anytime you want. And, you know, the weather's good, so everything's great. But, you know, if you live up here in the cold Northeast, you've got what you've got. So anyway, we go back to that same old word. It keeps coming out, realistic. Realistic is important. All right, so key takeaway here in creating a winter cycle training plan is to set measurable, specific, and attainable cycling goals. And it's a multi-step process. The time and effort spent are exceptionally worthwhile. And there's an action item here. Reviewing your ride data is especially important and easy to do on your career page, along with your training and event notes. We don't have a career page. We just ride our bikes. But anyway, write down your goals and try to make them stick. See what you can do. If once a week you want to go and show up to Ron's hour and a half long spin class where he literally kicks your butt and his too, then there it is. There it is. That's your ride of the week. That's the big ride of the week. The other time, maybe there's some garbage days in there. You just get on, put your headphones on, your earbuds in, whatever, and you just kind of cruise to some good music and have a good time. But anyway, it's definitely good to have these goals and to be able to go there. So let's see, number two here. Whoa, should I focus on base training this winter? Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I'm a big believer in base training. Base training is going to be that training that you're going to do in zone two, zone three, and you're going to keep your heart rate down low. You're going to open up and build capillaries. You're going to be able to process oxygen better in the long run, but it takes time to do it. And it takes, I think the best word I can use here is patience to do it right. And it's not for everyone. And I understand if that's something that you just can't commit yourself to, because there's a lot of time involved with it. If you're going to do base training, you've got to dedicate, you know, those 2 or 3 hour rides. And let me tell you something, 2 or 3 hours sitting on a trainer or sitting in a spin class, not my favorite thing to do. But, you know, if that's what it takes to motivate you and keep you going, then you do what you have to do. So to determine the type of training you should be doing this winter, you want to use your goal event, your experience, your availability of riding, training time to ensure you get the right training. If you're looking at that goal event, you want to take a look at that and you want to work backwards from it. So that's the way you set up your training log. You set it up so that you are a week away from your main event. You want to be very close to pulling a mild peak, okay? Mine's in late March, so I'm not gonna like push it too hard because I got a big summer ahead of me, and I just wanna, you know, complete the event is all I'm really looking for. I'm not looking to win anything here. Those days are long behind me, so I don't do that anymore. But anyway, I am looking though to finish my event with a reasonable amount of, that felt pretty good. It's always good. But how do you get it? Base training, base training, base training. And how are most cyclists doing their base training wrong? Well, too fast, too hard, too soon, too much. The two diseases, I like to call it. Just chill out. Chill out, chill out, chill out. Invite a friend over if you've got a trainer and they've got a trainer, and just get on your bikes and just chatter. You know, have a nice conversation. Enjoy what you're doing. If you're going to the gym, sit next to someone else on the bike and just chatter. That's fine. Oh, big heads up warning here on this one, because I know too many people that are, the scary thing, spinning instructors. And some of those instructors are not really keen on having you chitter chatter while you're in their class. So be smart about it and be thoughtful about it. Check and see with the instructor as to whether or not they appreciate that or not. If you come to my class, you can talk all day long. I don't care. I really don't care. If you're talking, then you're probably working a little bit harder than the person next to you because you're talking too much. But that's another story. So I would say that if you do decide that you're going to do a chill ride, you're going to go real easy, you might just want to run up to the instructor ahead of time and say, hey, I'm just doing an easy ride today, so don't mind me if I don't jump out of the saddle and go really hard when you ask me to. I'm just trying to pay attention to my heart rate today and my zones, and that's what I'm doing. They don't care. Some do, but I'm not one of them. So anyway, do what you can do. So I would say that base training wrong is probably just riding too fast when you're doing it, and not riding consistent enough, meaning not getting out and riding every single day and or every other day or whatever it is that fits into your schedule. So you want to make sure that you do that. How do you create a winter cycling training plan that's right for you? Good question. If you've never done it before, brand new, gonna have to figure it out, okay? Again, go back to your first upcoming event and work your way backwards. So if by the time you get to your event, your goal was that you wanted to be able to go out and feel strong and ride for 4 hours or 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever that event may be, then you work backwards from that and you eventually and gradually work up to that point. And it doesn't necessarily have to be all hard training. As a matter of fact, it shouldn't be. It should be maybe I say 20% of your training should be at a very hard level. Otherwise, you're just building base. That's all you're doing. Getting that cardiovascular system set to go. Planning on getting out on the road maybe once a week, twice a week to get the feel of the road because, you know, you're going to be out there doing your event. You know, you just kind of have to look at it. We're going back to that same word I started out with. Realistically. Yes, realistic choices. So, yeah, there's if you're a racer, there's training races coming up. I got to hand it to the UConn kids. You know, we got a UConn cycling team up here at the university, and I have seen these guys out. Mainly, it seems to be guys, but I've seen a couple of women too, and they are out riding in weather that I used to ride in, but I don't do that anymore. And, you know, a tip of the cycling cap to them. It's just really hard to motivate yourself and get yourself out into that kind of weather. But, you know, if you need to get that base training in, and I know the collegiate year starts much earlier than the regular bike racing year. So they got to get a lot of work in early to make it all happen and for them to be what they feel is competitive when they're getting out there and racing in the intercollegiate races. But good for them, not me, not doing that anymore. I just want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bike and I want to feel good when I ride my bike, because when I ride my bike, I feel good. So I want to feel good when I'm riding my bike. Does that make any sense at all? When my hands are on the handlebars and the road's moving underneath me, the world is right. It's perfect. So anyway, that's all I'm looking for. Progressive training begins by building general base fitness, and then you build, slowly build up and up and up and up. What you're going to find is you might, as you're doing more and more base training, I used to see this when I was doing base training back in the days where we didn't have much to go on, like heart rate monitors even, or wattage meters or any of that stuff. We didn't have any of that stuff. We kind of went by how we felt. And that was like, okay, but not great way to train. But that's the equipment we had. So we had to use our heads in this. But what you're going to find is what I was doing at that time is I had a specific gear that I would start out in. So the gear in the back of my bike, if I could spin it at 90 RPMs and I could go out and ride for an hour with that gear and still keep my heart rate relatively low, I used to check like this, put my finger up against the side of my neck and I would count. If I could ride like that, then that was good. But and as I got progressively better and started using my heart rate as a guide, I found that maybe I was in the next gear up. Maybe I was in the next gear after that. So you're progressively, even though you're still riding at that low level of base training, you are progressively getting faster if you're doing it right. That's the key part, if you're doing it right. So be patient. And you want to dedicate at least 12 weeks to your base training. If you don't have 12 weeks, 8 weeks is a safe minimum. Anything less than 8 weeks just isn't very productive. As for your build and specialty phases, it's ideal to dedicate 8 weeks of training to each phase. So you got to be smart. What approach to winter base training should I take? It all depends. Everybody's different. Depends on your experience, your schedule, your type of event you're working for, your family life, your work life. Oh gosh, there's so many things to, that's something you just have to sort out on your own. So you could be a triathlete, you could be an enthusiast, you could be a bike racer. You could be anything, you know, really. And you just kind of have to take it from past experience is best. If you're just getting into this, baby steps. That's all I can tell you. Just baby steps. Take your time. You'll get there. It eventually will come around. And you'll know where you are when you start testing yourself hard. And that's when you get to find out that maybe I need to put a little more effort into this, or maybe I need to be training a little bit smarter. There's a lot of things you can do, and you can make those choices. So mentally preparing yourself for a successful season, you know, just stay happy, man. Stay happy. If you're not having fun when you're out riding your bike, you're doing it wrong. Best thing I can give you as far as advice goes. If you're not seeing improvements, even little baby, tiny little improvements, then maybe you're not doing something right and you need to think about that a little bit more. But the key point here is if you're not having fun, then you need to make adjustments. So that's how I feel about that. How do you optimize your indoor training setup? Any way you want. Indoor fan, super helpful. Great stereo, super helpful. Big TV monitor, super helpful. You know, and even a way of bringing in maybe a little bit of outdoor air when you're riding in your little confined area that you use for indoor training. Good idea. Nice fresh air coming in is always a good idea. And, you know, you want to train with friends. You can train with friends online. There's so many options right now as far as that goes. So anywhere from being a Zwift rider to just, you know, dialing up a friend that lives on another part of the country and saying, hey, I'm going to ride at 10 o'clock in the morning my time, and I'd like you to join me for a ride. And then you just FaceTime each other. Simple. You don't, it doesn't have to be FaceTime. It could be whatever. There's all different formats now of which to do that. So, you know, pick that as a way of doing it and just have a great conversation. Talk about days in the past and different rides you went on. And boy, I still wish you were living here because it would be really nice to ride with you. Well, we can still ride together. You figure it out. It's a great way to motivate yourself. And what do you wear when you're training indoors? Whatever you're comfortable in. But seriously, a pair of cycling shorts and a good pair of cycling shoes works great. Something to wick off the moisture works great. Don't forget to bring that little hand towel with you because you are going to need it. So whatever's most comfortable works great. Your cycling shoes, absolutely. You want all that stuff. How do you identify which workouts you should do outside? Watch the weather. That's all I can tell you. Just watch the weather. The more you can get outside, the better off you'll be. But watch the weather. And what's the best gear to wear when you're training outdoors? Wow. Layers, layers, layers. All depends on the weather. Cold weather can be tough. So please be careful. And be really careful about watching that weather report. And they say, and the wind is coming out of the northwest today. And it's coming in at about 15 or 20 miles an hour. That's going to be a hard ride. So make sure you ride into the wind and then turn around and let the wind blow you back home when you've just had enough. Yes, it can happen. The wind can change direction. It's, if you've been on a bike as long as I have, you've had not just one of those experiences, but numbers and numbers of those experiences. It happens. But hopefully with all the modern forecasting that we have right now, you can get a little bit better idea what's going to happen. Staying motivated to train indoors, take a class. If it's really got you down, you can't pull it off, go take a class. Go take a spin class. Sign up for one of my spin classes if you're local and around here. I'll throw some ideas at you at least that maybe you can use for future workouts. So I would say that that's a great way. Plus, it also gets you out with other people and you get to have conversations and, you know, you get to talk about, you know, your upcoming ride that you're training for, whatever it is. So that's it. We're going to move on into the content here more in the show, which I had spoken about earlier. And we're going to go right back at where is my beautiful, oh God, rumors flying that the Trump administration wants to undo the bike lanes. Why? So anyway, bike lanes, as we all know, make a huge, huge difference as far as the safety of your ride goes, the safety of your commute goes, and, they take a lane of road in order to put them together properly. If you want to have a bike lane that goes in both directions, you're going to grab a lane. That lane may have had parallel parking in it. It may have had cars in it. You riding in a dedicated lane is not going to congest traffic. It's actually going to make it less congested. I'm sorry. Common sense is just a very, very difficult thing to stumble over, but there it is. According to documents obtained by Streets Blog and interviews with several government employees, the Federal Highway Administration has been analyzing congestion patterns along several critical Washington, D.C. corridors outfitted with bike lanes, with an eye towards an unspecified reallocation of lane space, which sources say likely means giving it back to drivers. Boo! Can I hear that? I'm listening. Boo, not good. Yeah, we don't want to give it back, okay? We finally fought for it, and we finally got it. Now we feel safe when we're riding our bikes, and now we've talked three or four of our neighbors into coming out and joining us, and that's three or four more cars that are not congesting the roads. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? This is so simple. So simple. So anyway, we've got we got some backwards thinking going on down there in DC, and you know, it's just really frustrating a lot of people in a lot of different ways, that's for sure. But if roadways the analysis seems to rest on a series of dubious calculations that claim DC drivers are losing hundreds of thousands of hours per year in traffic along those corridors, with an implication that bike lanes themselves are responsible for the gridlock. Not true. Even roadways that did not lose a full lane for car drivers when bike lanes were installed were listed as costing drivers hundreds of thousands of hours lost in additional traffic. You know how you lose hundreds of thousands of hours being caught in traffic? Buy a car. There you go. You want to know how you can gain it back? Ride a bike. This is really not difficult. So Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy believes, as he stated back in April, that you see more congestion when you add bikes and take away vehicle lanes, though he has no evidence that cites that. And if you go to places like Streets Blog or Momentum or any of the bicycle advocate type places, you're going to find that his information is exactly the opposite. So, anyway, the Federal Highway Administration's own website, though, notes, their own website notes that studies have found that roadways did not experience an increase in crashes or congestion when travel lane widths were decreased to add a bicycle lane. And experts say that even outright removing driving lanes to make space for other modes typically has a negligible impact on traffic for motorists or even reduces congestion in some cases. This is from the Federal Highway Administration. Mr. Duffy, do you ever read the manual? Anyway. Moreover, advocates warn that myopic analysis ignores all the other benefits of bike lanes, which are recognized around the world. It's a critical tool for safety, affordability, access, and more. And it also ignores how profoundly the proposal would undermine DC's freedom to build transportation system its residents want, even as Republican leaders in Washington emphasized the freedom of the state DOTs to build highways. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. You know, eventually, some of our younger people in this country who are actually using their bicycles for transportation in major cities, and more so than we ever used to, eventually they'll be older and they'll be in political situations where they can continue to encourage and educate those who are ignorant. That's all I want to say. I got to leave it at that and move on. This is not a good thing. Taking away bike lanes it's like, someone just said this, it's really funny. It's like throwing lighter fuel onto the fire to make it go out. Doesn't work. Anyway, by the way, don't try that. Okay. So this is just a really, really bad idea. And we're going to move on because I don't want to talk about it anymore. But I do want to talk about New Jersey's terrible e-bike law. Oh, God. Okay, so New Jersey has passed the most restrictive e-bike law in the United States. Now, we're heading to New Jersey this weekend, and I don't have an e-bike. That's a good thing, because if I were to bring my e-bike with me, I would also have to bring my motorcycle helmet with me. Yes, folks, you heard it correct. If you are riding an e-bike in New Jersey, you need to be wearing a motorcycle helmet. Yep, that's the new law. It's all right there. They also want that bike registered, they want it insured, and they want to charge taxes on it. They want to recognize it as a motorized vehicle. So, e-bikes now require both registration, a driver's license to ride anything, anywhere in New Jersey with class 2 and 3 e-bikes, also requiring an insurance policy. The final bill places unnecessary and burdensome restrictions on low-speed e-bikes while leaving higher-risk vehicles like electric mopeds and motorcycles without additional regulations. The harmful bill was... this kind of stuff is, it's almost humorous. This harmful bill was rushed through committees and full floor votes in both houses despite universal testimony and opposition. Multiple media outlets have reported on the negative implications of this law on riders, retailers, and the industry as a whole. The law sets New Jersey up to become the most unfriendly state for bicycling in the country. Hear that, New Jersey? Do you hear that? The final version of this bill eliminates the current three-class e-bike classifications used in 46 states and instead puts forward confusing new categories. Negatively affects retailers in New Jersey and tourists from other states whose e-bikes will not be legal to operate in your state. Continues to place a burden on vulnerable populations by requiring registration, a driver's license, and insurance for most electric bicycles. Doesn't provide a clear plan or funding to implement the law. Existing legislation on Class 3 e-bikes passed in 2019 requires registration, insurance, and a license, but has not been implemented or enforced. The bill calls for a massive increase in those requirements. And another bullet point: fails to address the real safety issue that contribute to more than 500 fatalities and 3,000 serious injuries on New Jersey's roadways in 2025. Motor vehicles, including unregulated high-speed e-motos. People for Bikes is disappointed that this bill is now a law, but is encouraged by the unity of the many bicycling and transportation advocates who quickly rallied in support of amending and improving the bill language. They say, we are currently cooperating on draft language for a new bill to address the issues created by the legislation and redirect the focus of regulatory and safety efforts on e-motos and the high-speed electric mopeds, motorcycles, and dirt bikes being marketed to kids in New Jersey and across the country, and the same devices involved in recent fatal crashes that led to this bill. Wow, huh? Isn't it amazing? So, we're going to keep our eyes on this one because this is rather interesting, and I'm sure there will be more updates on that. We definitely need an amendment on that for sure. Let's see, what else do we have here on the amazing list of things going on? Wow. So there's a Minneapolis retailer that is helping plan Preti Memorial rides nationwide. Bike shop called Angry Catfish Bike Shop. What a great name for a bike shop, huh? Angry Catfish, yeah. It's helping plan and promote a memorial ride this Saturday in Minneapolis and assisting organizers around the country in holding their own events. The South Mississippi Minneapolis shop was frequented by Alex Preti, a nurse and cycling enthusiast who was killed by Homeland Security agents on Saturday. I don't have a whole list of cities yet, but as of the writing of this, there are a dozen participating right now, said Jared Alder, the store's director of Stoke. That's funny. And he told Brain that in an email, Bicycle Retail Industry News, in an email late Monday. Angry Catfish is sharing a zip folder of creative assets, including copy and art that can be edited and added to locations and other specifics to posters, flyers, signs, and social media. The assets are courtesy of Casey Robertson of Robertson Design, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we're asking folks to host rides and come together. Bike shops, nonprofits, cycling orgs, and all alt cycling collectives, city and rural. We are many, but we stand together as one, the shop said in a social media announcement. And the poster says, we ride in unity, and a number of lines underneath his face and picture with a drawing of him with a bicycle helmet on, for all, for Alex. Ride together, stand together. There you go. Yep. That's a good one. So now then there's another corporation out there called Wolf Tooth Components, and they make bicycle components, and primarily for the e-bike and mountain bike business, but nice chain rings, good heavy-duty stuff. Especially if you have an e-bike and you need something a little more heavy-duty and reinforced, that's what they make. And they're just 10 miles south of the ICE protesters that's taking place in downtown Minneapolis. Wolf Tooth Components employees here have been supporting the cause. It's our employees who have been feeling the impact by spending nights and weekends supporting their communities and standing in solidarity with their friends, families, and neighbors, said Kurt Stafiki, Wolf Tooth Components and Osto Cycles marketing director who lives in South Minneapolis. So that protest was amplified over the weekend with the death of veteran hospital nurse and cyclist Alex Preddy. I'm unaware of anyone here who knew Alex directly. Some of us were connected to him as a friend, or as a friend of a friend. Our local community is small enough to where I'm sure some, if not all, of us crossed paths with Alex on a ride. I really hope I had the honor of pedaling in the same group as him at one point. He represents the best of humanity. He owned a Surly Bike, a brand owned by Minneapolis-based distributor Quality Bicycle Products, and also a local participant in bike events, and a customer of the South Minneapolis bike shop, Angry Catfish. The shop will hold that memorial ride this Saturday coming up at 1:30 p.m., starting from Washburn Fair Oaks Park, and is coordinating promoting memorial rides in other cities. Wear your woolies. It's cold in Minneapolis. And but you know what? If I could be there, I would be there. I definitely would be there. I'd just bundle up, do whatever I had to do, just ride for a couple of miles to say I was there and do it. But anyway, Quality Bicycle Products is calling on industry members to contact elected officials to advocate for a change following Preddy's death. The company also said it's evaluating a path forward for its Frostbike dealer event, which is scheduled on February 26th through the 27th. That's a really big deal in the bicycle industry, by the way, Frostbike. So anyway, yeah, the people on bikes get, we get active. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. I think you're going to see a whole lot more. That we have to skip by. Here we go. Let's move on to, we've got a little bit of time left here, and we got to go down the goat trail. Yeah. So GOAT, everybody kind of knows by this time what that means, greatest of all times. So just to put this in perspective, I just want to be clear here. Tadej Pogačar, who is being listed as a GOAT, greatest of all times, he's had 108 wins, GC 19 wins, one day races 29, individual time trials 8, 8 grand tours 6, Giro 1, Vuelta 1, and classics. He's done 20 classics and won 20 classics. So that is Tadej Pogačar. Across his professional cycling career, Matthew Vanderpoel has won 179 races from 240 race days. Why am I mentioning Matthew Vanderpoel? Because no one's even near him in cross right now. The Cross World Championships is coming up this weekend, and it is quite clear who the best rider is at this time. Matthew Vanderpoel is straight out from the gun. He puts the hammer down, and eventually he drops everyone in the field. He is riding at an incredibly good level right now. He is amazing. And, you know, now his number one competitor, Wout van Aert, is out. So we gotta at least throw that out there. The one guy who could put the pressure on him and make it really happen as a competitive event is out with a broken ankle. By the way, Wout van Aert, as I mentioned last week in last week's show, was back on his bike after something ridiculous, 10 days, and he's back on his bike. He's got a light fracture of his ankle that was suffered in a cyclocross race. So anyway, Matthew van der Poel, though, 179 races from 240 race days. That is pretty darn impressive. He's had 56 wins, 5 GCs, 26 one-day races. He's winning a whole bunch of those. 6 Grand Tours, 5 Grand Tours, the Giro once, the Vuelta, no times, the Classics. He's got a whole list here. But anyway, this guy is unbelievable. He comes from really, really good genetic background. His grandfather was Raymond Poulidor, and Raymond Poulidor was one of the greats back in the day. We're going back to the Eddie Merckx days, and you know, while not ever winning much against Eddie Merckx, because Eddie Merckx was, again, another GOAT. He was another greatest of all times. He was still a very, very solid rider. And when Eddie was first, then he was second. So it's not like he's nothing. And this is where Matthew van der Poel comes from. That was his grandfather. So we look at this. His father was also a professional cyclist. And you look at where this guy came from. He's phenomenal. Watching, if you ever get a chance to watch a race and they're showing his wattage outputs, it's mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. He was in the Tour de Flanders a couple years ago. They had a heart rate monitor on him. They had a power meter on him. And they were recording it. I think it was like live Strava or something. And they're recording this guy. And this guy averaged for a 130-mile race, something like that. He was averaging close to 400 watts. Average. 400 watts is, that would put me in the hospital. It's not conceivable. Of course, I am not as large of a person as Matthew van der Poel is, and size does matter when it comes to wattage. So we all know those small skinny riders, yeah, they can put out a lot of wattage, but it's not their norm. Their norm is strength to weight ratio and their aerobic capacity, and there's a lot of factors that are involved here. But anyway, Matthew van der Poel was putting out 400 watts on the average for the Tour de Flanders, and when they got to a 14 or 15% cobbled climb, he left the field behind on that climb. And it wasn't a long climb, but it was a hard burst of energy that left other riders that were behind him literally shaking their heads, going, oh my God, I cannot believe how hard this guy's going. And he blasted away from them. His wattage, 1600 watts. So he went from 400 watts on the average up to 1600 watts. If you know anything about this at all, if you're a cyclist that pays attention to your wattage output and you know how much you can do at any given time, because maybe you have the equipment to measure that sort of thing, 1600 watts is a lot of watts, man. It's just like, that is a serious, serious amount of power. And the fact that he can just blow that out near the end of a race on a 14 or 15% climb on cobbles, let's add to that, on cobbles, not on a smooth surface. Impressive stuff. Matthew, good luck this weekend. I can't wait to see it. We are going to the Worlds this weekend. What do we have here? So Matthews chasing records at the Cyclocross World Championships whilst the women race remains open, and there's going to be, so the women's race will be a little bit tighter. I've seen things going back and forth there. Lucinda Brand, though, is riding really, really well right now, so we should see something there. Major shout out to our local riders from the United States that are all over there right now, because I'm seeing them in the results list, and talked about that a little bit last week. But anyway, yeah. It's kind of amazing. So, Van Aert with his fractured ankle definitely causes a bit of a problem. But there's a couple of youngsters coming up that look pretty good. So we'll just have to see what happens. But it is definitely going to be a fun weekend to be watching the Worlds. As for Saturday's women's race, the Dutch riders will also be the favorites for a home victory in the women's race, but the outcome is far from certain following a season of twists, turns, and injuries. Femme Van Empel from the Netherlands has won the title the last 3 years, but the 23-year-old put her career on hold this winter and won't defend the rainbow stripes in her home nation. Lucinda Brand will come into the race as a favorite following an impressive campaign, which has included 18 wins this season. However, fellow countrywoman Puck Patrice comes into the event full of confidence, following double wins last weekend in the World Cups in Mazamichelen and Hoogenheide. So, it's not over yet, man. The women's race is going to be a lot of fun to watch because it's going to be tight, 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 I think. But we will see. And, you know, it's cross. Anything can happen. You can puncture. You can wipe out. You can, you know, catch a barrier because you thought you were really good at jumping over them and you didn't do so good. There's so many things that can happen in cyclocross. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And the best part about it is you only have to sit down in front of, let's say, YouTube, because that's where I watch it, for just like an hour. You get to watch the whole race, start to finish, all done. Beautiful. Perfect. Fun stuff. All fun, fun stuff. So anyway, that's the world. It's this weekend, and we are out of time. So I'm going to be bringing this show to a close. Remember to save the date for the 2026 Bicycle Leadership Conference in Dana Point, California. And that is coming up March 17th through the 20th. The 2026 Giro d'Italia will take place from Friday, May 8th to Sunday, May 31st. And it will feature the famous Grand Parlanza with the first three stages in Bulgaria before transferring over to Italy and culminating in Rome. It's the 109th edition of the Giro d'Italia, which will have challenging mountain stages in the Alps and the Dolomites, a key time trial, and finishes with the traditional circuit race in the Italian capital. Tour de France 2026 will take place from July 24th to July 26th, kicking off with the Grand Départ in Barcelona, Spain, and concluding with the traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, featuring 21 challenging stages and 2 rest days. So those are the big events coming up. This is it. Time to come to a close. Finishing points. Give us your opinion. We love to hear your opinion if you've been listening in today. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride a bike, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking your car or truck for a day and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, Dr. Franz Storch. And remember, this is Pedalin' Ron. Keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It just might save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM and WHUS Stores, WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!